and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for the show on this episode is Samantha Lewis, principal at Mercury Fund. It's Women's History Month, and Sam and I are going to discuss women in VC and the rising need to get women in the check writing position. Plus, we talk about how Houston's innovation ecosystem is developing with intention in diversity and inclusion. Samantha, thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I've missed you.
I know. It's so good to see you, at least through screen. I'll take it.
I know. And, next time we'll have to do this over wine, but don't tell anyone.
Yeah. So the reason we set up this interview for you to come on the show, because you're actually the first ever podcast episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. So way back when, and now we're here like over 70 episodes later talking again because you have a new role. So you have moved on over to Mercury Fund. So tell me about that. How did this come about and what is your focus at Mercury Fund?
Wow. So what a year, right? 2020 had some crazy things happen, but this is a really good move for me in 2020. I'm so excited. It's nice to look back on the year with some big positives. So I am so excited to be at Mercury Fund. I'm a principal here now on the investment team, for those who don't know that. I have known Blair and Aziz actually at Mercury since they taught a class at Rice called Financing the Startup Venture. And I took that. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. So in 2017 in the spring, and I asked Blair, I said, I want to be in VC. Do I have to move out of Houston? And he told me, there are so many things going on here. You give it a few years, you'll get there. And I was like, okay, cool. Cause I love Houston. I want to be here. So I was like, great. I'll give it a few more years. And so then the Goose opportunity came up, obviously. So I got to learn the investing side. I got to learn how to structure deals and manage a portfolio, do due diligence, and do all the investing activities around startup. And then it was beginning to be time for us to figure out what my next step was at Goose. And there were a lot of opportunities we could have done internally there. But at the same time, Blair and I touched base. And we started talking about an opportunity at Mercury Fund. And so the timing worked out for me to jump over here. And I'm very excited to be here. So it's been a fun on-ramp. So I'm about 2.5 months in. So, when we do another podcast, Natalie, give us another 70 episodes that you can do. And then we could touch base again. I'm sure I'm going to have very different insights. But right now, I'm really excited about being here. We have... one of the things specifically that Mercury brought me over to focus on from an investment perspective is something that we're calling our power theme. And so think about it as giving people the power to make decisions that are authentic with their values around sustainability and around impact. So there's a lot of changing consumer behavior driven by the millennials and driven by Gen Z around making sure that companies are following sustainable practices that through their supply chain, for example, let's take Topple, that companies are weaving impact through all of the decisions that they make. Thinking about diverse hires, for example, would be one thing. So we're thinking about the technology tools that allow investors more insight and transparency into that sustainability and impact, but also allow companies to really be able to track that and eventually to monetize that. So that's one piece of the theme. The other piece, which I'm actually hyper focused on, is thinking about the democratization of financial services. And so there's a lot that has to do with that, but legacy financial institutions have ignored large groups of our population here in America and broader for a very long time. And technology is actually breaking down a lot of those barriers. And so there are all these groups that have traditionally been ignored that now technology can reach to help them build wealth, to help these groups understand more about the financial markets, understand more about how they can build wealth, understand more about how they can use leverage and things like that. And so we're really focused on the fintech side of democratization and access. And I'm super excited about that one.
Yeah, so you mentioned Topple, which I love to talk to you about since you've been very involved with them since day one. It took you all of like 3 minutes to mention Topple, and no one is surprised because
of course
it is. It is such a cool company. And of course, I've had Kim on the podcast before. So tell me a little bit about the opportunity for blockchain in this space and what specifically Topple is doing that, you know, really drew you into the company at first and then later Mercury Fund to lead their latest investment round.
Yeah, that's a fun one because Kim and I hit it off early on when we met. I've spoke about this plenty of times before, so just fast forward, you know, if y'all are tired of hearing it. But Kim and I met early on, I think in 2017 or 2018, and just really hit it off. I didn't know much about blockchain at the time. I think I had owned a little bit of cryptocurrency because I was like, this is interesting. Let me start figuring it out. So that was like my little knowledge of blockchain I had. And so over the years, what I did was just use them as a full resource to help me really understand blockchain and what blockchain is well positioned to do in the space. And at the same time, I was really helping them think about how to go through fundraising, how to think through investment strategy and bringing investors on, how to think about fundraising strategy and some of the business model parts of it. So I joined their board a few years ago and have been very involved with them ever since. I actually led a syndicate in their pre-seed round as an angel investor. And then Mercury led their seed round, which closed late last year in 2020. And so through that is what I started getting closer with the Mercury team again, through a lot of the talks they were having with Topple and some of the strategy sessions we started having around their go-to-market strategy. And that probably is another thing what opened up the door for me to jump over here, us knowing that we worked really well together. So that it's been a really, it worked out perfectly that now I still get to work for Topple, work with Topple, and that Topple is a portfolio company in Mercury Fund. And then Goose, who I also love, of course, because I was with them for 3 years, Goose also came in on that round. So it was fun to see the Houston ecosystem really rally around a company that I had been screaming from the rooftops as a great company for years. But, you know, it took them to get some traction for investors to really, for more institutional investors to really jump on board. And now they're there. And I'm super excited about what Topple's been able to do and the, I think, really badass investors that they've brought around the table, including Mercury, including Goose, and including quite a few other VCs.
It's really right on par, which, you know, we haven't talked about specifically like the financial industry, but what I hear a lot about too lately has been, you know, ESG and the lack of trust from whatever type of industry company, but especially, you know, oil and gas and this prioritization of ESG. So is this something too that, I don't know, y'all talk about in the Mercury, in the halls at Mercury Fund, finding the next great startup that can really help streamline ESG within companies?
Yeah, so actually, not to continue the Topple conversation, but so that's something we've talked about a lot, specifically as it relates to Topple. And so there's this other component of what Mercury does for portfolio companies, which is another reason I absolutely love the firm and the platform that we're building here at Mercury, is we're very hands-on as the company needs it. So we can place them with some of our platform partners to help, but also we can help. And so one of the things that I've been super focused on is helping Topple build out their beta and early adopter users. And so build out that pipeline. It works perfectly along with what I'm trying to do and the startups I'm trying to find to invest in, because there is what Topple calls BaaS, blockchain as a service. Mm-hmm. And there are any company, any startup out there or company that is trying to prove their ethical and sustainable practices through their supply chain. And whether that's sustainable clothing or whether it's impact driven based on some of the environmental metrics, like you just mentioned, they can plug into the Topple blockchain And Topo has made it really easy for companies to do that. They don't have to have a lot of blockchain expertise to be able to do it. And so I'm actually going out, meeting a bunch of startups to think about from an investment opportunity, but also to connect them with Topo. So we're really building an ecosystem with Topo kind of at the center around impact, ESG, sustainability. And it is perfectly aligned with my values. And I know it's very well aligned with the team at Topo's too, and the other investors here at Mercury. So it all starts flowing together and I get really excited about it.
That's such a cool opportunity for Topo then to get connected to their network.
Absolutely.
They hit the jackpot.
Well, thank you. I'm going to ping them and remind them that or tell them you said that.
And I love Kim. As we mentioned, we both are in her fan club and she's a female founder. This is my segue into talking about Women's History Month, which started this month. And so I think it's perfectly timed because you and I have had long talks about the nature of women in VC, female founders, of course. So I wanted to talk to you about this, specifically focusing on, you know, the role women play in startup investing. So from your perspective, let's get the sad, not so happy part out of the way and talk about what 2020 meant for women in VC.
Yeah. 2020 was a rough year. It was a rough year for a lot of people. The data is showing it was an extra rough year for women, and not just women, people, underrepresented groups across the board. But since it's Women History Month, we could stick with that theme for now. And, you know, it's something I'm very passionate about. So it was a rough year for women. I would say, you know, they started calling it the she session. It was so bad. There were so many reasons that it hit women harder. And some of those were women are traditionally take up the extra work around the house. So how can they actually do their full-time job at the same that men can if they also have another full-time job by going home and taking care of the household? And so there's some things that hopefully opened a lot of people's eyes to that shouldn't just fall on women. But there's also technology tools that are starting to pop up because there are more female founders that understand this problem in a unique way that men don't. And so those companies need to be getting funded. So I think that's kind of the point. It's not necessarily that it was a bad year for women in VC. I think where the real focus is it was a bad year for women trying to build their careers and in a much broader kind of perspective. And also some of the data coming out was showing it was a very bad year for women trying to raise money. And so it rebounded a little. But the bottom line is there has to be more women with check writing abilities. And when there's more women with check writing abilities, more women will get funded. That is true. Like that is, I don't think people really debate that anymore. And so it is up to then the people in VC who are hiring that, or the institutional investors who are giving money to funds to make sure there is always a woman on the investment team and not just one woman, right? Mm-hmm. It should be more than that. There shouldn't just be one woman, because there was also a study that came out yesterday. If there's only one woman on an investment board or one woman on a company board, they speak 40% less than if there's two women on the board. And so that's just, there's a lot of negative implications for how women speak up in meetings and the impression that they give off for speaking up or interrupting or having strong opinions versus what those opinions are for male colleagues. And so having another woman in the room just gives it that much more, I guess, maybe implicit confidence to speak up more. And there are a lot of things that need to be said around making sure that more money is flowing into female-led companies. And with that, there has to be more women hired into VC, and there has to be more women with check writing abilities. And whether that looks like angels and educating women who are angels, or educating top-tier VC firms and large VC firms on their hiring practices, and making sure that once they're hired, there's also a safe space for these women to rise up in these investment firms. And so there's a cultural piece of that too. And so there's a lot of moving parts. It's complex, but I was very encouraged by some of the things that came out in 2020, large endowments, for example, saying that you have to have women on your team or we're not even going to look at you. NASDAQ saying you have to have a diverse board or you shouldn't go, you know, your company is going to be hurt. So there are changes that have to be made at an institutional level or a system-wide level to solve it. And I'm starting to see the winds blow in that direction. So of course I have to give a Game of Thrones reference, but you know, George's final book is A Dream of Spring. And so that's what I like to think about. So it was the winds of winter, the dark night of 2020. But I feel like it is through that some very positive things came out of there, and spring is coming. So I think we all need to think about every single decision we make. If you're an investor or if you're a startup CEO or if you're just in a startup or you're joining a startup, is make sure that you have a safe place to speak up for diverse hiring practices, or you have a safe space to speak up for making sure you have parental leave instead of just maternity versus paternity leave. And so there's a lot of systemic sexist and bias racist things that go into how HR policies are built. So packing those apart, building primers for your company, for your board. I mean, I do this all the time just because I get really passionate about something when I read an article and my blood starts boiling. So I was like, what do I do with all this energy? And I write out research primers on why it needs to be parental leave versus paternity versus maternity is an example. And so I think more people just being really conscious of that across the board, including our white male allies, is going to be the promise of spring.
And if anyone had Game of Thrones reference on their Samantha Lewis bingo card, check that off because
yes,
everyone knew to expect that. Anyone who knows you knew to expect that. And this is so interesting to me because it really is like recreating a whole culture within the business world. It's really what it comes down to. And to broaden it out even more, you know, when it comes to diversity, especially in Houston, when we're building out this innovation ecosystem, we want to start with that rather than create an innovation ecosystem like one on the coast that maybe has, you know, issues with diversity. Houston is a place where we can do it more strategically and more intentionally. So
right.
I'm setting you up for talking about developing a different type of innovation ecosystem in Houston and the role you play in that, really.
Absolutely. So yes, there have been many ecosystems that are getting a lot of attention, one right down the road as well, that are not diverse and they're not thinking about. From my understanding, of course I'm biased because I also love Houston, but I don't think people are thinking about building them out as intentionally as we are. I think our Houston innovation leaders, I think Natalie, you having a really good, I think you do a really good job at making sure you're covering all of Houston, not just a bubble of Houston, making sure that those voices are heard and making sure that those startups are getting attention that aren't just from the traditional network of money is incredibly important. I think that's one thing. I think another thing is because Houston's being so intentional about it, I really think we are positioning ourselves to be one of the most sustainable ecosystems. And we have, as we've all talked about, all the time, right? We have a lot of the raw materials here that we need to build a robust ecosystem. But one of the main differentiators that I think we can be is inclusive where others aren't. And with what I was talking about, my theme earlier, right? Gen Z, millennials, not saying they are the only ones that care, or we are the only ones that care, but we're the ones that are going to be driving a lot of economic value. And we already are driving a significant amount of the economic value in the world. And so we care about that stuff. And I don't really want to be part of a fund. I don't want to be part of an ecosystem. I don't even want to invest in companies that aren't thinking or being intentional about building diversity. And so it is just so authentic to who I am, to who Mercury is, and to who Houston is, to be really intentional about making sure that we're doing that. And I hope we all look up in a few years and there's a lot more opportunity here for people that there is not necessarily opportunity for, as it currently stands. There's a lot of really interesting things going on. I know we've been talking about ways to deploy capital into entrepreneurs of color, different ways to deploy capital specifically into women companies starting, to get more women check writers here. And I try to be as involved with that as possible. What I'm doing to hopefully give my part is I do what I just call Sam's office hours on Friday afternoon. About once a month, I have a female entrepreneur who maybe is not a fit for Mercury or maybe is too early for us, but who I just really have a good connection with. I have them come in. One of us brings wine, typically, of course. That's, you know, the rite of passage. So, and then we just crack open a bottle of wine and we whiteboard for hours. And we think about everything from how they're building their team, how they're connecting with investors. I usually end up connecting those investors or connecting those startups with really early stage investors if they are earlier, if it's just a different type of company that Mercury doesn't focus on. I have a lot of network from Goose because Goose was focused on very different investment themes than Mercury was. And so I'm trying to just open those opportunities for. Now, is that scalable? Not necessarily, but it is something I'm being really intentional about. So from a scalable standpoint, I'm just getting involved with accelerators and investors across the U.S. who have a specific focus on making sure that they're getting underrepresented or underestimated, as Arlen Hamilton calls it, founders into their programs and or into their portfolio. And that's who I'm specifically building out my network with.
Well, and you've kind of answered in part my next question, because I know, as you mentioned, you've been familiar with Mercury Fund for a while, and you've seen the fund evolve from the outside and now from the inside. But I do, having Keith on just like a few episodes ago, we talked about how Mercury Fund approaches their kind of diversity inclusion within their portfolio. And so from your perspective, what is Mercury Fund doing that is right in line with the intentionality that you mentioned and yourself doing? And then how are other funds able to incorporate that by looking at Mercury Fund and kind of taking notes?
That's a great question, Natalie. I can't wait to talk about this 70 episodes later when some of the work we're doing is already implemented and out there. But we're doing a lot of work around it. So one of the other reasons, if anyone has worked with me, they know I am a process freak. And so that was another big reason that Mercury brought me on, is because I built out all the process at Goose, of course, because I was the first hire. And I started two and a half companies before. I always say half for the one that we decided not to go forward with. So one of the things that I'm driving here, and that they really just are giving me free rein to drive, is process. And that is process on how we make decisions, process on how we think about our pipeline and the data we're collecting on the companies we're talking to. And this is really important for Mercury right now because we're at an inflection point, right? This is a little bit of a side note, but I think it's really important to understand. So Mercury is really at a super exciting inflection point, which is why else I really wanted to join the firm whenever I started talking to other funds. All the work that the partners and the team have done over the past 15 plus years is building out ways for entrepreneurs to build companies outside of the coastal hubs. And it was always one of those questions that they would get would be, why outside of the coastal hubs, right? And they would have good answers, but people wouldn't always recognize that. And I don't think people were always appreciative of it until COVID. And so now everybody understands why you get out of the coastal hubs. Everyone is starting to be like, oh, it makes a lot of sense. You can build a company in a much more capital efficient way by leveraging Middle America resources or resources outside of the coastal hubs. Well, Mercury is well positioned, right? We're on Fund 4 and we're well positioned to really be a leader in that space. And so I know that is a complete side note, but I think it's really important to understand why we're so focused on driving process and really unpacking a lot of things that Mercury has done over the past 4 funds and thinking about, now that we're at this inflection point, what are the next things that Mercury wants to be? What should be synonymous with Mercury name? And so we talk about that a lot. And one of them is impact. And so we're not an impact fund, but we want to be impactful in how we spend our and how we deploy our capital. And so one of those things is by us unpacking everything that they've done from a process standpoint and then putting it all back together as building blocks, we really get to think through kind of what we just talked about, Natalie, about how we're intentionally building out the Houston ecosystem, right? And we get to do that with how we're building out our entire investment process at Mercury. There's some few very simple things. It's like every time a deal is talked about, we're going to have, or every time it's put into our CRM, it's going to say, do they have a founding member from, you know, an underrepresented group? And we'll list them out and we'll start collecting data on that. And then we're going to hold each other accountable to make sure that that's the case. We can be transparent with people, with portfolio companies, with companies we're talking to, with LPs, with whoever we choose to be that with on what those metrics are. And I think those metrics are going to be good. And so I hope that by us being thought leaders in that space and showing how we're tracking these metrics and what that actually turns into from who gets funding, and if they start to fall off, say we have 50% of our pitches are from women, great. 20% are from Black or Latinx, or let's just say in general BIPOC. Then, but only 5% are getting funding, then we're going to go back and we're going to look through that. And so now we're collecting all the data to just make sure that that's there. There's also some metrics, some impact metric reporting that we're going to start building in to understand. We're putting guidelines together. I mentioned the parental leave earlier. We're putting guidelines together for our portfolio companies to help them think through how they're getting diversity on their boards, how they're hiring diverse candidates for their management teams and all the way down. So there's just a lot of different things that each individual here at the fund, I think, was always doing. But now I'm putting process around it and we're putting tracking metrics around it so that we can really use those to hold ourselves accountable. Once we build this out, hopefully at some point we'll be able to call it best practice. And once we can do that, I absolutely think that's something that we would share with other funds.
I think it's interesting, both I've talked to both Heath and Blair about this, like the original on recent podcast episodes. So if listeners are tired of hearing about this, it's because we've talked about this. But the origin of Mercury Fund focusing on middle of America companies as an underrepresented group within venture capital and startup ecosystem. So that origin was always focused on underrepresentation. But now this pivot point, this point of inflection, like you mentioned, is really intentional with diversity focus. So that's really interesting to see that come to fruition. But always remember that this was always the point, to find groups of people that were underfunded and provide them funding.
Yeah, exactly. And then put the resources. I think that's the other key point. Like, everyone is coming out saying, sure, we're going to be more diverse. Sure, we're going to open up our pipeline and try to take pitches from more women. But there's also a lot of follow-up and execution that's different for these groups, for these underrepresented groups, just like in the middle of America, how Mercury has always been investing. There are always resources, which is why Mercury built out the platform partners that these groups needed because they're not necessarily in one of the coastal hubs, right? Same thing with when we're thinking about other groups and how we're going after them. Cultures are different, one. Communication styles are different. But not only that, it's what other resources do they need? Because maybe they didn't go to Stanford, or maybe they didn't go to Harvard, or maybe they are the first generation to graduate college, or the first generation to even be in America. And so the first generation for the woman to actually be working. And so how are we making sure that we're putting the resources around them that I think is often so taken advantage of by people when that is just an automatic thing they've always had their entire life? And so not to take success away from anyone, because of course it's hard to build a company whether you're the most privileged person or not, but it is much harder when you don't have access to the resources that a wealthy family, a well-connected family, or going to a really strong university with a really strong network can give you. And so that is something else that I think Mercury has always done a really good job at. And now we're making sure that we're trying to build that out for these different groups that we're also trying to touch.
Absolutely. Well, I want to pivot the conversation to talk about Houston again, another one of our shared favorites.
Yes, H-Town.
So one of the things, I mean, now Innovation Map being 2.5 years old, it still comes up that, you know, one of the holes that Houston has in its developing innovation ecosystem is a lack of venture capital. And it's not necessarily that it's not here. It's just that there's not enough, I guess. Depends on who I'm talking to. But there's still this realized need for more VC. And that VC activity doesn't necessarily need to be Houston-based VCs, but VCs from other places coming into Houston. So from your perspective, now, you know, working at a VC firm, what's the solution? Are we on path to changing that? Are people going to stop telling me when I ask them, you know, what's the biggest challenge with being located in Houston is can't find money? When are people going to stop telling me that?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know, honestly. Of course, I am a forever optimist when you're catching me on a good day. So today is a good day, Natalie. So I'm going to be a forever optimist today. I think that another silver lining that came out of the shit show of 2020 is that entrepreneurs that are not necessarily based in the coasts can start getting funding. Now, what does that actually mean? And how is it actually going to play out? And are those funds just throwing money because they're like, sure, yeah, now we could tell our LPs we paid attention to Austin, Texas. I don't know. Are they really going to have the same support, right, that the companies do that live right down the road from some of these VC firms? That's all still TBD. And that's why I say I don't know, because I'm not exactly sure how it's going to play out. Right now, what I believe is that some of the ecosystems, specifically Houston, we have built this out thinking about how we get, with a lot of the work Houston Exponential is doing and the SDOs, how do we make sure that we're giving entrepreneurs the most resources that we can give them? And so I think we have a pretty robust resource foundation. Now, if capital is flowing in, but that capital actually isn't following up with some of the support that you'd hope investors would give, if they say are based in New York, and so then you don't really get to talk to them as much, you can't pop into their office when people do that again, then that is an opportunity for a lot of the business intelligence we have in this town. And that's an opportunity for the SDOs and Houston Exponential to really fill maybe a resource gap that might not be there. So if capital flows here, great. I want to make sure that entrepreneurs who are considering taking capital, if it's their first or they typically aren't used to investing outside of their region, to be careful with that, though, and really see like what sort of resources you give portfolio companies and how are you planning on doing that with me being based in Houston or with me being a fully remote team or whatever it's going to be. So I think another point of that is, I think I read this, Coinbase put remote first on their filing documents for their direct listing. And that's kind of cool. So if all these companies are going to start putting remote first, then are VCs really going to care about where the companies are located? And I think all of that is TBD. And I think it just depends on how effective teams really can work virtually. I love being in person with people, so that's just me, but I know that that doesn't make sense for everyone. And so it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, since I have Optimus, Sam, I thought I'd also ask you, you know, what are you looking forward to in 2021, putting you on the spot, but what are you keeping a close eye on? If it's trends in VC, if it's things happening in Houston, you know, what's on your radar for this year?
A lot of things, but I think there's two that are relevant to what we're talking about today. So one, I think 2021 is going to be the year for ESG. There is institutional capital that is claiming they care and claiming they're going to start putting their money where their mouth is. And that is going to be a huge inflection point for companies that are not necessarily, they don't have to be impact companies, but companies that have impact woven through their decision making. And so that's what I encourage everyone to think about when you're building a company. Again, going back to this intentional word, right, is when you're building a company, be intentional about every single thing you do and make sure that you are thinking about weaving impact through every single thing. Because if you're not, I have this very strong conviction that you're going to be at a disadvantage. And I don't know if that's going to be in 5 years, in 2 years, or in a decade, but I absolutely believe that people who are not building up a inclusive culture and impact driven, meaning it could mean anything, right? But for example, thinking about sustainability through your supply chain. If you're not thinking about that now and being intentional about building that up, I think it's going to hurt you in the long run. And I think that's what it really takes in a capitalistic society for this to be mainstream. And I think we're very close to being there. I'm excited about it. I think there's a lot of technology tools that need to be built that are going to help that are going to help the trend and give the trend staying power. And that gives a lot of opportunity for VCs. And so that's something I'm super excited about. I'm also really excited about people caring about financial markets in a whole new way, right? So there's all this jargon and there's all this complex analysis that people, I think that scares people away from trading equities or getting involved in the public markets. I think Robinhood, despite a bunch of the stuff that went down in January with Robinhood, did a good job at opening that up to retail investors. And then obviously, you know, with the Reddit revolution and some of the things that went along there, really a lot of the wool is pulled off of people's eyes. And we're like, hey, the retail investors deserve to actually be able to be players in this market. I think there's massive opportunity around how we make sure that that access is built in responsible ways, built in transparent ways, and really just giving people the ability to make their own decisions with what they want to do with their money and how they want to build wealth. And if they want to invest in companies who, or let's say funds who specifically make sure 50% of their portfolio has a woman or a person of color on the founding team, right? And when people can start making those decisions with their monies from a consumer standpoint, and institutions are doing it too, then we have the perfect storm to really drive impact. And I'm excited about that from a VC opportunity, but also from changing the world.
Wow. Okay.
I know, right? I know it sounds so cheesy, but it's just so true. It's like the world needs changing. I mean, we are literally ruining our planet. Right. And so it's like we absolutely have to do something about it. And so just do something about it. Like, let's do it. You know,
I would like to request that on our next catch up that we have with wine, whatever day soon, we continue this conversation, because that's exactly what I've observed, too. And I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about everything you just mentioned.
But yeah. So all of these things that have happened, we've had this unprecedented, which is way too overused of a word, but I don't know a different one right now, this unprecedented 12 months, right? I just am thinking back to every single thing that's happened to us, just let's say as Americans, and then let's say as Texans, thinking about what happened to us 2 weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. And with the great freeze. So I think if it didn't prove to every single person that change is absolutely needed and that without change, we are spiraling, then I don't know. Send those people to me. Let's have a coffee with them, you know, and let's chat with them, because there is so much that needs to change from how we think about inclusivity, how we think about our environment, how we think about sustainability, how we think about impact. And now we can't ignore it anymore. And I think the last 12 months were the most obvious signs. There were many signs that just slapped us all in the face, as in like, we can't ignore this. It's going to take all of us as a collective to care, and we have to care, and we have to put our money where our mouth is. Stay tuned. That's the next Medium post.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, these are for the listeners. No, and that's a really great, I think, place to kind of wrap up our conversation too, because it's so relatable and it's so top of mind, I think, for, like you said, us as Americans, us as Texans. But maybe just to close up for the startups listening, you know, startups looking to fundraise in the near future, what what sort of resources do you have to recommend to them for either getting in touch with you, Mercury Fund, or the greater VC world?
I think if you're ready to raise money, make sure that you, I think I said this last time too, Natalie. I think it's, remember every single touch point you have with an investor is a data point for that investor. They're diligencing you. We are diligencing you every single time we see you or talk to you, as hopefully you're diligencing us as well. And so when you are ready and to raise money, make sure you're a fit for an investor before you even go talk to them. And if you're not a fit, say, I know I'm not a fit, but here's something. You have this connection on LinkedIn, and I think it would be really useful for me if you have a reason to talk to them, right? Or they, or y'all get connected somehow. So that's not a resource. So it's not really answering your question, but then I'm going to get to the resources, I promise. I think that that's just one of the most important things to do, because we all want to help, right? Especially I think Houston is trying to be as helpful as possible, whether we're on the investor side, the SDO side, advisor side, or startup side. And we all want to help each other. And so how do we make sure that we are being efficient with everyone's time? And if you think that you're a fit for Mercury, or you think that you are aligned with everything you heard me talk about today, I absolutely want to hear from you. So just comment on Natalie or reach out to her and she can pass you along to me, because it is, I want to talk to Houston entrepreneurs. I want to talk to teams who care about everything that we talked about today, including impact and diversity. And I want to talk to teams who are building really badass technology that's going to help change the world. Well, not only change the world, save the world, right? And then also just help people building technology that's giving access to groups that haven't had access before. And whether that's to knowledge, data, education, financial markets, whatever it might be. I want to be talking to you, because if I can't help you, or if Mercury is not a fit for some reason, I know a lot of people in the space, and I really want, I think the rising tide lifts all boats in Houston. And so I'm here. I'm here to help as much as I can. I'm going to start doing office hours now that I kind of have my sea legs at Mercury. I'll start doing office hours. So hopefully I'll be seen and be out there for people more and more in the ecosystem.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
I also am trying to be more active on Twitter. So,
oh,
you know, holler at me on Twitter.
Everyone give her a follow. S. Joe Lewis.
That's right.
Hold up, S. Joe Lewis on Twitter. But yeah, thank you so much, Sam. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm so excited for your new role at Mercury Fund. And you're one of those people changing the world or saving the world. So
thank you. I'm trying. So Natalie, I think you are too. I think this is why we get along so well. You know, one of the things, if anyone is playing Sam Bingo, I don't think we mentioned cats. Oh. So sad.
Okay, well, now we did.
Okay. Hey, everyone. I got a new cat. Because I foster fail, got a new cat. So now I have one too many cats. But, you know, I love them.
Such active cats. They go out and about. They are social. They're socialized. They are the cutest. Okay.
They are. I love them. Okay.
Well, we completed our Sam and Nat bingo. Oh.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.